Welcome to Wild Hearts at Work, a podcast redefining our relationship with work through stories and conversations with wild hearts who have dared to challenge the status quo. And now, here's your host, Melissa Boggs.
Welcome to the Wild Hearts at Work podcast. This is your host, Melissa. This week, Bob Osmond from Racepoint Global, here to talk with me about some incredible things that he is doing at his agency. I'm so excited to have you, Bob. It's always a joy to talk to you, and now other people get to hear it too.
Yay. Well, it's great to be here, and I'm super excited about what you're doing with the podcast and all the things you've been doing since we did get to work together back in the day.
Pre-pandemic. Oh my goodness.
In the before times.
So I know you get asked this on every podcast, but do you want to give us the quick elevator pitch about Racepoint Global?
Sure. So Racepoint Global is an integrated communications firm. We're an independent agency, and we work largely with B2B technology and healthcare companies. And so our mission, I guess you would say, as a firm is to help our clients shape conversations that matter. And that's, I suppose a lot of people talk about brand purpose. And so that has something to do with it, but it's really about finding the intersection of technology and humanity and helping our clients tell those stories. So we work with clients who are super deep tech, things that I don't understand. And I've been doing technology communications for 25 years. And then we have others who are in the software space, in the enterprise space. But every company these days essentially is a technology company. They may not show up as a technology company, but essentially underpinning everything is technology. And I think this notion of experience, so consumer experience, brand experience, is really grounded in how well the technological underpinnings work to create that experience. So that's the work we do. And we are really lucky to work with a number of great clients from global Fortune 500 companies to startups. And it's been really fun. I've been at RPG for about 18 months. I joined right after the lockdown started. And so my interactions with most of the people with whom I work are just like this, Melissa, on a screen. And so it's been quite a crazy ride over the last 18 months or so, but that's who we are and what we do.
Amazing. I was going to say, I'm glad that you can be comfortable because, like, aren't we all, you know, on audio and on video all the time these days?
It's like this big performance we're all doing. It's all part of the big simulation that we're in.
Oh God, the big simulation. So I was going to ask you, just to kick off, how you think your employees might describe you. But instead, I went to Glassdoor and found out myself. Uh-oh. So, the most flexibility of any agency I've ever seen or heard of. That was one quote. Another was, with the new president joining, they have breathed fresh life into the agency. So one of the things that I've heard you say on other podcasts and even on Glassdoor was that you have this flexibility first culture. Mm-hmm. And as someone who cares a lot about the wild hearts at work, you know, people who really require that kind of flexibility, I was curious just to hear a little bit more about that.
So flexibility to me, right? Flexibility is either something you have or you don't have. So not to say that it's, well, I suppose in some respects it is binary. So my view is we're talking a lot about all of these different models, right? Well, there's the hybrid model. There's this, but to me, you're either flexible or you're not. And so my perspective on that is I want people to work where and when they work best. Full stop. I also recognize that we work in a client-driven organization, and we're very much in an always-on culture, in large part because of the technology that I talked about earlier. So if you are in an always-on culture, then you have to find ways to protect the parts of yourself that don't need to be always on or need time to refresh or just recharge. And so because of the demands of the work and because the work doesn't happen between set hours, it's silly to me that we would create a culture that requires you to be sitting in a particular location, staring at a particular screen during set hours, when in reality, I think the best work, the best ideas happen where people feel most free. So if that means for one individual, they like to get up, make their pot of coffee and crank out work between 5:30 and 7:30 and then go to a yoga class or go for a run, that's cool with me. If it's a working parent and they have to manage either, well, during the pandemic and the lockdown, manage actually homeschooling their kids. Mm-hmm. But if they have to manage getting their kids to an appointment or to school or whatever it is, and the optimal time for them to do that is during what we would consider working hours, then, you know, I don't have a problem with that. And I want to make sure that they know that this is something that they can do, they can own. They don't need to be stealthy about it. They don't need to be coy about it. Just go about your business. So the idea of flexibility first is just that, but it only works, in my opinion, if you have a foundation of trust and respect. And so when we talk about it and we talk about our culture, flexibility is the both the goal and the, I suppose, planned result. But really it's grounded in this notion of autonomy plus accountability. Mm-hmm. So we're going to work with people whom we trust. We're going to work with grownups who know best when they're going to be at their best and know best when they need to check out. And all we ask in return is that they're accountable to their colleagues, to their clients, and, you know, in many respects to themselves. And so I don't think it's rocket science, but I do think that, you know, I've been doing this work for a long time and I've worked in agency for a long time. And I was always baffled by, you know, us talking about clients who are re-engineering the way we work. Mobile technology, it's going to change the way we work. Social business, the way we collaborate, it's going to change all of these things. And then we do that work for clients and then we tell people, I need to see your face between 8 and 6 p.m. in this particular office. It makes no sense. This dissonance makes no sense. And so I think that if you're trying to build a culture grounded in trust, then you cannot have a say-do disconnect between, you know, how you're showing up externally and what's happening internally. And so for us, we just communicate to our folks, be flexible. And I will say, Melissa, that everybody gets it notionally, but the trust part is the hardest part. So convincing people that, you know, it's okay for you to take a walk in the middle of the day. Took a long time. Some people, I mean, I've been with the firm 18 months. There's some people who've confessed to me only recently that I finally get it. I can actually go take a run in the middle of the day if that works for me, or go to a yoga class, or just unplug and read a book. So that's what we mean when we talk about flexibility. Probably not shaking any foundations here and defining it that way, but for us, it's pretty core.
I don't know. First of all, I love it, of course. I wonder if it is shaking some foundations, though. So I have to ask, because I'm not in the communications world as deeply as you are. I would assume that this is actually pretty, I love using the word rebellious, but, you know, it's probably not the way that all communication firms operate. Is that true?
I think that's true to a point. I think most firms, even the giant holding company firms, are recognizing that this remote first reality, look, we were tremendously productive during what was a ridiculously challenging time. In many respects, probably too productive. And I think that the great, whatever we're calling it, the reckoning, the what's the latest catchphrase for what's happening now? So this is in part a reaction to how focused everyone was in just keeping the work moving. So I think most firms recognize that they have to have some level of flexibility. I do think there's still this notion that we're hanging on to a little bit, that we got to see people's butts in seats to feel like they're doing work. And in large part, that could very well be because so many large firms own so much real estate. It's kind of like, well, we're paying for this damn office. Mm-hmm. Let's at least look like we're using it. You know, we have office space and some people use it and some people don't. And some people use it. There's one woman I was talking to last week. She lives close to the office. She goes in the morning and goes home and makes her lunch and works the balance of her day at home. I mean, the point is that works for her. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how rebellious it is. I do know that in the good old days, like in the before times, people in this business, we would define flexibility as people can work from home on Fridays. We're flexible. No, actually, that's not flexible. You're dictating when people can work from home. That's the opposite of flexible. It's flexibility theater. And
ooh, flexibility theater. I'm writing that down.
Okay. Melissa is writing it down.
Melissa is writing down flexibility theater. That's going in the show notes. So, okay. Some of that in the before times. So we're talking about, you know, like, okay, you can work from home on Fridays. I have a theory that a lot of that's fear-based, right? Because
100%.
It might be societal, it might be generational even, but I may not trust that my folks are still going to do what they need to do. So it feels risky, right? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things I was going to bring up is that some of these things that you are talking about, they might be risky. So what do you do in order to kind of create some infrastructure around that and not only mitigate that risk, but actually have a better result as a result?
Well, so one of my favorite phrases, and I don't know where I saw it, but it's that fear is a liar.
Mm-hmm.
And fear exists only because we give it the fuel that it needs to survive. And so I do not see any real risk, like zero risk, in empowering people, because what it does, I suppose, is it exposes where there are gaps in accountability. So, you know, we talked about flexibility theater. There's also productivity theater too.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Right. Which is, oh, well, Melissa's always at her desk. I see her there. I'm in, I feel like I'm the first one in, but oh, dude, Melissa beat me again today. Oh shoot. And so, but then she's still there when I leave. She must be so important and so good at what she does and so productive. And I mean, I plead guilty. I was that guy for years. I mean, I was always first one in, last one out. That was my mantra. Why? Probably fear. Like, well, I just want to make sure that people know that I'm working hard. And I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm just showing up like a real team player. That's all fear-based stuff. And so to me, I have zero fear, because if someone is struggling to support their teams, their clients, get their work done, then what's great about having a flexible environment is it exposes those cracks and you can address them. And I just think too often we create these environments that allow us to pretend everything is fine when it is not. And so again, it's like, oh, well, it all appears fine.
Yep.
Melissa's there. She's working hard. And by the way, you know, in the before times, maybe, or before the before times, that wouldn't have been cause for alarm in a lot of organizations. Oh, wait, Melissa seems to be here like 12, 13 hours a day. Should we be concerned about that? Well, I don't know. It seems pretty good to me. Now we've really heightened, I think, a lot of awareness. And this has been happening over the last several years, I think, but around the importance of balance and wellness and this whole notion of work-life balance is a fallacy anyway, in my opinion.
Yep.
But no, there's nothing to be afraid of, because again, if you create a culture where there's a level of trust and transparency, where people have the autonomy to do the work when and where they can do it best, where they're accountable for their work, the rest of it takes care of itself. If it's not taking care of itself, then it requires fearless feedback and conversation that has to be grounded in another squishy word, but a critically important word, compassion. And so this is business in 2021, I suppose. And if it isn't, the companies where it isn't, I think are going to need to figure this out because talent demands it. And so they should.
Absolutely. One of my episodes early on was the Great Reckoning of 2021. And that was exactly my point, was that these things that were nice to have before, you know, that companies could sort of, you know, advertise as what made them different, still makes them different right now. But give it 5 years. You know, my daughter loves that I bring her up in almost every podcast, but both of my kids, when these kids hit the workforce, they're going to smash all of this with a 2x4, you know? So we got to get ready now. Right. Yeah. And, you know, being another person who ran my org similarly, there's results from that, you know, and the results aren't just happy employees. They are happy clients or, you know, a happy community in our case. I do happen to know there are some things that you do at RacePoint to create that trust and transparency. And so can you talk about just maybe some of the norms at RacePoint?
Well, I think the one of the norms is a commitment to a regular cadence of communication between, quote unquote, leadership and staff. So I am the last person to encourage a meeting for meeting's sake, but we do, and the feedback was that it was incredibly helpful for people, especially in the early days of not just my tenure, but when we were all navigating the pandemic. So we do a 30-minute stand-up 3 times a month, so every Thursday, and then once a month we do a 1-hour meeting. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, we do that. And part of that, only a small part of that, is the business updates. So I'll share things like what pitches are in progress, what we won, what we didn't win, any client challenges. I mean, we're very transparent about all of it because my view is that people are going to hear from somebody else. I would much rather they hear it from me. So I share any business updates, but that takes up about 5 to 7 minutes of any given meeting. And then the rest of the time we turn the mic over to members of our team and we highlight them in part to reinforce some of these norms that we're talking about. So wellness and establishing boundaries, those kinds of things. We have people talk about the ways in which they're doing it. And some people really share, like, they're prepared to get super vulnerable about it. Like, oh, I used to think I couldn't do this. And then I did this thing and I realized the sky didn't fall and I still had a job. And so there's that part. We really focus on the core behaviors that we try to instill. So things like curiosity. We'll ask, what are you curious about this week? Someone will say, thought this was interesting or that was interesting. And then people will chime in. And sometimes people will ask a question of the group. And then that creates a whole conversation about certain things that can then spill over into other comms channels. We'll talk about growth mindset. So give an example of somewhere where you effed up and learned. Give an example of something you're trying that you haven't done before. And share your experience. Because the point is, fundamentally, if we're trying to create a culture that's grounded in these cultural values of authenticity, belonging, and compassion, which we are, then we have to reinforce that virtually at every touch point. And so that's what we try to do. And then, you know, in the monthly meeting, which is usually a little bit longer, we'll highlight a client team. They'll present some work they did or some success that they had. we'll celebrate the birthdays and all of those things. But there's a really frequent number of touch points in the face-to-face or whatever this is. By the way, the weekly meetings, the norm on that is people can join however they want. If they want to join by phone and walk while they're doing it, they can. If they want to be on video, they can be on video. The monthly meeting is one where we ask everybody to be on video just because it's nice for us all to see each other. But then we have other channels that we use too. So we have messaging. We have an employee engagement channel that we use where we share knowledge and insights. And I actually feel like the number of touch points that we have during or spurred on by this pandemic probably are greater than if we had this illusion of sharing information because we were all in the same space.
Yeah, because you're intentional about it.
Exactly. You know? And that's the key.
And what I definitely hear is not only intentional about what you're going to do, but how you're going to do it and what you're trying to get out of it. Imagine that a communications company would have intention about how they're going to communicate.
Well, imagine, but also imagine, you know, the cobbler's kids and all of that. We're also really bad at some of this stuff.
It's always the case.
We're just flawed humans like everybody else.
Always the case. Yeah. There's a huge storytelling component to that, though, and I love it. I mean, that is one of the things that when I work with organizations around any sort of culture, anything, whether it's you want to shift your culture or you want to maintain it. I mean, it all is storytelling. Like we have 50 different definitions of culture, but at the end of the day, it's all about the stories that you tell. And so I love that you're making not only making space for storytelling, but different channels, different types of storytelling, and that it's not all coming from you and your leadership team.
That's it. Because I'm tired of hearing my own voice, and I'm sure other people are too. But every single thing we do, it's almost, I feel like every week is, you know, if you're binge watching a show on Amazon or Netflix and you get the previously on, right? Mm-hmm. That quick 90 second or 1 minute precis, especially if it's a longer form series where they'll pull things, it's like, wait, that happened like months ago. But that sort of sets the context for what you're about to see. And so we really do try when we're sharing anything is to place it in the context of the core values and the core behaviors versus like this random thing that we're talking about. Nothing is random in that sense. Like there's always a connection. And if there isn't a connection, so one of the things when I talk about, you know, we say our mission is to shape conversations that matter. That also is a guiding filter for us as an organization. Well, is that a conversation we need to be having? Does it really matter? So things like, you know, gossip or toxic conversations, like, is that really a conversation we should be having right now?
Right.
Yeah, it all relates. I know you've done some work, I think, around the notion of the red thread.
Mm-hmm. I have.
So that's something that we try to, not explicitly, like I don't say to people, oh, and here's the red thread. But I try really hard to make sure that we can easily connect the dots to whatever it is we're doing, to whatever it is we're saying.
Yeah, it's so important, like the continuity of it all. That leads me into something else that's loosely connected. So one of my observations in organizations is that leaders can talk all day about trust and they can talk about transparency. And those things are very tightly coupled, probably more mm-hmm. tightly coupled than most people think.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, whether they realize it or not, what their actions are saying is that the trust is expected from the team. And also the transparency is expected from the team, right? So can you tell me a little bit about what you and your leadership team do to demonstrate your trust to them, in them, of them? And flexibility is obviously a big one. But also, how are you transparent with them, not just expecting them to be transparent with you?
Well, I think one is being very transparent about just the state of the business. In addition to all of those other touch points that I talked about, I do twice a year what I call a state of the race update. by the way, we share financials and everything pretty much on a monthly basis, but okay, here's what's happened in the last 6 months. Here's where we're going. In December of last year, December 2020, I didn't share the 1 year plan. I shared the 2023 vision plan. This is where we want to be as an agency. And there were chapters to that story. And so to the point that we were talking about earlier, we're in chapter one of that Vision 23 story right now. Right. And so in this episode, this is what's going to happen. And so we're super transparent about that. When things happen like, this hasn't happened a lot, thankfully, not good this year. But if a client is leaving the agency, as an example, we don't try to like tightly manage that information. What I've learned, and it's taken me a long time, but is that you can't, and I'm in the business of message, quote unquote, control, right? But within the whatever walls of an organization, especially today, it's really hard to control the information flow. So I'm a firm believer, we rip the Band-Aid off. And I don't always have all the answers. So I'm okay saying, I don't have all the answers. Like, I don't know what you're going to be working on next week because this client's going away. I don't know. But I do know that we're committed to X and Y and Z. If somebody's leaving the agency to pursue another opportunity, we don't wait days and days and days until we have a solution. Oh, we have to have a solution because who's going to backfill? Nope. This person is leaving. We're so happy for them. Congratulations. Just because what happens is if we don't do that, and yes, people will make promises. Oh, I won't tell anyone. But we're all human beings. Someone's going to know. They have confidants. They have friends. Somebody already knows. Somebody thinks somebody else knows. They tell that somebody. Then all of a sudden you have a crisis, not, you know, in small C crisis, but of confidence. Because to your point, well, you said you were going to be transparent with us. Why is it that I'm hearing this from this person and not from you? So in those little, I suppose they're kind of micro examples of being transparent. The other thing we're transparent about for folks is our salary bands. So that doesn't mean that everybody knows exactly what everyone is making, but we're super clear that if you are, I don't know, an SAE working in this market, you're going to be earning this amount of money from this amount of money to whatever the next band is. That's the range. We're super clear about that. People also know we've mapped out what the path is for each. So if you started at RPG, you know, tomorrow as a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, you know, account executive, congrats. Actually, we're hiring, so, you know, heads up. But you could, if you wanted to, you could say, you know what? I love it here so much. I'm going to map out my entire career. And you would know, essentially, what that would look like. What would you need to take on over the course of your career? What would it look like in terms of responsibilities and accountabilities? And how much money would you earn at most of those steps along the way? Now, where it gets a little squishy is once you get into, you know, higher order execs, because the market then dictates what's up. But we share and look at market data, so salary data. We make this stuff all available to people. Because they're going to find out anyway. Why not just make it easy for them?
Yeah. One of the things I always talk about with leaders about transparency is that if you don't, this is probably like a communications 101 thing. So you're probably going to laugh. But if you don't give people the real story, then they're going to write their own story.
Yeah.
And well, so, it's, you know, so
true.
Yeah. Then you're in a harder position than you were in the first place.
Yeah. It's like that great. Did you ever watch Mad Men?
No.
Oh, it's okay.
I'm not the episode in which Melissa admitted she'd never seen Mad
Men. Yes, exactly. It's fine. But anyway, I just realized I'm out of time. Just kidding.
Touché.
I'm just messing. But Don Draper says, you know, well, if you don't like the conversation, change the conversation. And it's that same idea. Well, why are people gossiping, or why are people talking about this stuff? Why are they wasting their energy? Well, take the energy out of it by just telling them. Now, yep. All of that non-productive energy that, to your point, people making up stories, it could be easily addressed just by being crystal clear about what's up. And then also being clear about, part of being transparent is also being transparent about what you can't be transparent about, and just owning it. It's like, that is not information that I am in a position to share right now. And sometimes that's the case. And I think, as with so many conversations that are happening right now, admitting what we don't know or what is a work in progress, et cetera, is a big part of being authentic, being transparent, and gaining trust, I think.
Absolutely. So I have to ask, with being transparent about so much, has there ever been a time when you really sort of had to take a deep breath and go, okay, I'm going to be real about this and it may not go well? I want to kind of highlight that it's not always easy for leaders to be transparent.
So early on, I want to say it was 2 or 3 months into the pandemic. And we had had some client departures for, like everybody, for a variety of reasons. But, you know, clients had retrenched and some had just said, we don't have budget for this. Or they were just being prudent. Like, we just don't know what's happening in the market, so we're going to dial things back. And we tried really hard to not have to make a staff adjustment. But we did. We had to let some people go. And what was interesting to me about, I mean, obviously that's a very painful thing to have to do for the people affected, but it also affects their coworkers as well, because they're thinking, am I next? Or is this just, is this what we're in for? Because remember, at the time, all of the news was bad. Mm-hmm. So I felt like before that, my job as a leader was to really try to keep people focused on what they could control. So just worry about, try to focus on your health, stay healthy, please, you know, find the balance that you can find. And then the client work will take care of itself. But the feedback I got when I shared the news that we'd let several people go, the feedback I got was, people said, well, it felt like it just came out of nowhere. And that we thought everything was great. And I really struggled with that, because I said, well, wait, I feel like I've been really honest with people. But then I also thought, well, it's also my job. It's my job to worry about this stuff, not their job to worry about this stuff. And I still don't know what the answer, I kind of grappled with it. And maybe it was just such an unusual circumstance where there was a convergence of so many things happening. If the question was, what's the lesson? I still don't know what the lesson is. I think the lesson is, well, you're never going to do it perfectly, probably.
Sure. And just that, you know, I think we have a lot of expectations on leaders, as we should, you know, about transparency and about leading. But I always think it's important to kind of highlight we don't often highlight the fear that comes with that, because leaders are humans too. Leaders have to deal with, you know, things that are beyond their own control, but they still have to be the ones to communicate it. And it's not always easy to, you know, to navigate that as a leader. And again, at the time that you entered Race Point, when like the world was upside down for everyone, you know, I don't think there is a right way to do any of that, except fully in your values to the best of your ability.
Probably. I do remember the one of the first things I said. In fact, I think in a town hall, I had a slide and it said, no sudden moves, right? That's what I said. I said, I know everything feels upside down right now. I just want you to know that I'm not planning on just coming in here and blowing things up. There will be no sudden moves. What I'm asking of you is to give, I'm going to serve you. I told him that. I mean, I believe in servant leadership. These are the values I want to guide what we do. And I promise you, I'm not going to blow stuff up. And my ask of you is that you're going to, and you don't know me from Adam, but you're going to just like, we're going to have a little social contract here where it's like, I'm not going to blow stuff up and you're not going to worry about me blowing stuff up. And that could very well have been the thing that set the stage for people saying, well, I thought everything was fine. And then we went and we laid off some people. It's messy and you got to own the messiness.
Yeah. Especially again, when it's like, what could you do? You know, I mean, the world is upside down and, you know, I think we've learned how to navigate, but there's still, it still feels like no set of moves right now.
Yeah. You know?
I did want to ask you if there has been a time, like you've granted this flexibility, you've established some infrastructure, you know, to keep everyone feeling in the loop and accountable, and you're all kind of in it together, that does create some safety. And so have there been times when maybe a wild heart in your org surprised you, and I mean positively, with what they did with that freedom or what they did with that flexibility?
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, I will say maybe this isn't a particular case, but one of the things that I have noticed is that the absence of these barriers, I guess, in an odd way, has really given certain folks the fuel to raise their hands and try things that I think otherwise they might not have done. And that's been really fun to watch because, you know, there's none of that, whatever, the dynamics of the being in a physical space altogether where the person who's like the keener, right? And they get judged by their colleagues. But there's this sort of quiet way that people have been able to say, I've never done this before and I would really like to try it. And so I don't know if that's being rebellious or not, but I do think that, and when that happens, I feel like, okay, people are buying what we're selling in terms of trying to create a safe space for them to try new things. I will say we tried this thing because I was finding that in those weekly touch bases, when we would open the floor for questions, I was finding that people weren't asking challenging questions. And I felt like maybe they were sort of keeping their powder dry. Because I'm thinking, well, if I'm them, I'm thinking this. So my whole deal is I just try to guess what questions are and I try to address those. But it's so much better if it comes from out there in Zoom land to me, and then I have to address it in the moment. So we created this little corner of our chat called the Devil's Advocate Corner. Ooh. And so we appointed somebody, like the staff, we appointed the first one, and then they nominated, whoever did it would nominate the next person. And the devil's advocate would ask the question, you know, embracing this notion of a service mindset, ask the question that they knew all of their colleagues were probably wondering about, what were too afraid to ask. And some people asked some pretty good questions, just in terms of, because they felt a little emboldened, because it's like, well, I'm just playing a role here. This isn't about me. This is about, you know, I have a role as the devil's advocate to ask the challenging questions. And so that was kind of fun, but it was permission to rebel versus people just creating a rebellion. There's been no Boston Tea Party or whatever the equivalent is in San Francisco and North Carolina.
You know, I love that though, because I think that's sort of the point. Like, you know, I've talked in the trailer for the podcast, I talked about how, you know, I want to help leaders see these kind of employees as an opportunity, not as an obstacle. You know, these very creative, you know, challenging employees. And also I want to equip our employees to effectively and respectfully rebel, you know, and the way that you close that gap is by creating an environment in which they can respectfully rebel. You know, for the betterment of the mission, you know, no one's saying we should all just rebel, you know, just because it's fun, but rather, no, I really think I could do something differently in service to this mission.
Yeah.
But so many of us have been afraid to allow that to happen, right? It feels risky. And so I love that you've really created this space where not only are you equipping them, but you're kind of saying like, no, do it. Come on.
Yeah. But I also get why there's hesitance, you know, especially in view of no one everybody feeling like things are just on quicksand. But yeah, I do think it sounds so paternalistic, right? Well, we're going to give people permission to ask us questions.
Right.
But that is the environment we're trying to create.
Right.
And, you know, it's a work in progress, but I feel like, you know, the stuff that you track to determine, okay, well, are we doing okay? It feels like it's resonating, and that's just data. But I think the experience that I'm getting in terms of all my interactions with people, it does feel largely like they're willing to continue to trust us to try to figure this all out.
Yeah. Well, I just want to go back quickly to the part about being paternalistic. I hear you. At the same time, there's this notion of meeting people where they are. Mm-hmm. And so many people are so accustomed to, you know, whether it's implied or not, not being able to ask those kind of questions, you know, so you do have to sort of meet them in that paternalistic place, if you will, mm-hmm. and then sort of take their hand and lead them out of it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's totally fair. And I think you're doing a great job in a number of the things that you're doing to meet them there and, you know, kind of lead them out.
Well, it's so much more show than tell, right? Almost always.
Sure.
So, and that's why things like the devil's advocate idea was like, well, let's just show them that we're serious, that they can ask these questions.
Yeah.
And, you know, command and control, whatever that is it's going the way of the dodo bird. And we're just only going to succeed. Look, to your point about your kids and my kids who are just starting their university careers, they have a whole different set of expectations that if we don't figure out how to meet them where they are, we're going to be up the creek.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question. Your first boss, and this might have been at a grocery store. Mm. This might have been, I don't know what your first job was, but how would your first boss have described you and what would they think of you now?
Oh, Well, I started working really young. So I had a newspaper route or route, as you say it in this country. I had a newspaper route, and my family, we had a little side hustle in the spring and summer where we sold bait for fisher people. And cool. So those were my first two jobs. So one of my bosses would be my mom and dad. So hopefully they would describe me as, you know, perfect. But I think probably hardworking, diligent, hyper responsible, whatever all of those synonyms or whatever. I've always believed that working hard is important. And as I've gotten older and maybe wiser, it's really about working smarter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to figure out, but that's kind of what we're trying to do at RPG, is to convince people that, you know, measure twice, cut once. Take the time, do the foundational work, and try not to be too reactive in the moment, but also recognize that it's a really long game, that life is a long game, and the decisions we make now have an impact on our long-term well-being as individuals and then the health and well-being of an organization that you're a part of. So it's been humbling in a lot of ways to go through so much change in such a short period of time. And I'm super grateful that I've been lucky enough to work with a team of people, not just the leadership team that I joined, but also everybody who works at RPG, to kind of like, all right, well, let's give this guy a shot. And it's been pretty fun.
Amazing. So Anything last that you'd like to share? I believe that you're hiring. That might be something worth sharing.
So I think we, like virtually every other organization in this country right now, is looking to hire people. We're looking for people who are curious, who like to write, who like to use their noggins to solve problems, big and small. We're hiring at, you know, entry level and folks who have a few years experience. So in the agency world, so senior account executives, account supervisor level. And we're looking for people because we're flexible, right? We're hoping to find people around our hubs. So Boston, Raleigh, North Carolina, and San Francisco and New York. But honestly, for good talent who embrace the values that we're trying to bring to our work every day, we're certainly all ears. So yeah, there's my plug. Come join RPG.
Ooh, it's cool. If you want to measure twice, cut once, go to yoga and ask hard questions. It sounds like RPG is the place to be.
There is no other place like it.
Amazing. Well, Bob, thank you so much. As always, having conversations with you is the light of my day.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how the reviews are. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it, Melissa. And congrats on the podcast and all the stuff you're doing. And I look forward to chatting again soon.
Amazing. So for everyone else, thank you again for listening to this episode of Wild Hearts at Work. I hope that you've taken something away about flexibility and compassion and what can happen when you actually do create an environment of entrepreneurship inside an organization. If you did enjoy it, please share with your friends, like, subscribe, stay connected with me here at Wild Hearts at Work. Until next time, dear hearts, stay wild.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Wild Hearts at Work. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share. For more resources and to connect with Melissa, visit melissaboggs.com. Also, if you or someone you know is doing great work in a wild way, get in touch about being a guest on the show. Until next time.